bright day.
Welcome to this podcast on software testing and software quality from Rice Consulting Services. My name is Randy Rice, and I'll be your host. In this episode, we'll discuss the current issue of the Software Quality Advisor newsletter. The featured article in this month's newsletter is Testing Without Defined Requirements. Over the past few years in teaching and consulting with testers and test managers worldwide, I've noticed something interesting. On one hand, testers complain they hardly ever get user requirements adequate for testing. On the other hand, when discussing what to base test on, the main response is user requirements. And when I suggest there's other ways to design and evaluate tests, the response is similar to the time I accidentally walked into the glass of the revolving door at the Portland airport. Surprise followed by intense laughter. I'm serious, though. First, there are some ways that we can look at... There really are other ways to design and evaluate tests besides requirements. First, let's look at why you may need to do this. By the way, let me be quick to say that I'm a big believer in having solid, testable requirements for any project. Without them, you're at risk for a multitude of problems, including not knowing if an acceptable solution has been delivered. However, I know we must also anticipate real-world situations in which we may not, or should I say probably not, get testable requirements. Here are just a few of the situations that may require other techniques than requirements-based testing. The first thing you'll hear sometimes is Hello and welcome to this podcast on software testing and software quality from Rice Consulting Services. My name is Randy Rice, and I'll be your host. In this episode, we'll discuss the current issue of the Software Quality Advisor newsletter. The featured article in this month's newsletter is Testing Without Defined Requirements. Over the past few years in teaching and consulting with testers and test managers worldwide, I've noticed something interesting. On one hand, testers complain they hardly ever get user requirements adequate for testing. On the other hand, when discussing what to base test on, the main response is user requirements. And when I suggest there's other ways to design and evaluate tests, the response is similar to the time I accidentally walked into the glass of the revolving door at the Portland airport. Surprise followed by intense laughter. I'm serious, though. First, there are some ways that we can look at... There really are other ways to design and evaluate tests besides requirements. First, let's look at why you may need to do this. By the way, let me be quick to say that I'm a big believer in having solid, testable requirements for any project. Without them, you're at risk for a multitude of problems, including not knowing if an acceptable solution has been delivered. However, I know we must also anticipate real-world situations in which we may not, or should I say probably not, get testable requirements. Here are just a few of the situations that may require other techniques than requirements-based testing. The first thing you'll hear sometimes is we just don't do requirements well. The title of this article is intentional. The word defined explicitly indicates that requirements are in a documented form that can be discussed, reviewed, managed, and all the other things you do with the things that are written, including filing them away and forgetting them. Well, hopefully we'll not do the filing away and forgetting part. Failing to create and manage requirements well is a cultural and a process problem. No matter how important the tester see requirements as being, unless the project team and the customer see them as important, you're not going to get them, or at least to the degree that you need them. So even though you may rant and rave, at the end of the day, you still don't have testable requirements. Or consider the situation of commercial, and that's okay. Then you can think of a series of test cases or conditions that will accomplish the testing of the process based on user scenarios. The big question is where to find the knowledge of the processes. Well, there are several possible sources of process information in most organizations. One place is user knowledge. You'll have to interview the users and work with them to map the process. It helps to speak with multiple users to get the complete and correct picture. Or training materials. Sometimes you'll find process flowcharts and other kind of documents in training documents. And also, don't forget business process re-engineering documentation. At some time in the past, there may have been an effort to re-engineer processes, and this is one deliverable from that type of effort. And then finally, system documentation. Yes, you can still find documented processes there as well. Just make sure it's current information. It takes a little practice to get good at mapping out the major processes. I prefer to use flowcharting as the technique since there are so many good flowcharting tools on the market. One of my favorite tools is SmartDraw, which you can find at www.smartdraw.com. If you visit their website, you'll see some examples of defining processes with flowcharts. One important thing to remember is to keep the level of detail general enough to manage the complexity. My personal guideline is to limit the major decisions shown in the chart to about 5 or 6. Even this low number of decisions can yield 25 or more scenarios. I do not advocate the need to test all scenarios unless the risk is high. You will still need to prioritize and choose the scenarios that are most likely and most critical. Another way to design non-requirements-based tests would be through usage patterns. Usage patterns are just ways that people naturally use a system or software. For example, some people are partial to using a mouse for as many actions as possible. Other people use the mouse and keystrokes. Some people make maximum use of shortcuts while others ask, "What's a control key?" The problem with this source of tests is that if you try to test all the software functions in the usage patterns, you won't have time to finish the test. For this reason, I usually recommend this type of testing be done as a part of usability testing. And then there are generic test sources. There are at least 14 sources of tests that fall into this category. And once I start reading these, you'll understand that these are things that you may intuitively think of as well. One would be field and data level exits, such as are the field exits its attributes correct? Another would be record handling. Is the information passed correctly from point to point in the application without data loss? Another would be file processing. Are the files accessed and processed correctly? Another would be field and data relationships. When two or more data items are related, are the relationships correctly processed? Another would be matching and merging of data. When two or more data sources are involved, are the data merged together correctly? Security. And then performance. And control flows. Do the various control flows in the code perform functions as intended? And then procedures and documentation. Do procedures and documentation accurately describe the application's behavior and function? Audit trails. Can the transactions and functions be traced to a specific time and a specific user? Recovery testing. Can processing be recovered from an error state? Ease of use. Error handling. And finally, searches. And then there's generic functionality, and this is functionality that is contained in most applications, such as adding, updating, deleting, and querying data. The catch is that these functions are performed differently from one application to the next. And then there's the aspect of exploratory testing. In the absence of any defined knowledge of system or software behavior, exploratory testing can be a way to both learn and to test. You may find behavior that's obviously incorrect, and you may also observe behavior that leads to further research and to determine correctness. Although I think exploratory testing is a helpful method, my main concern is how to know if I'm seeing a bug or a quote-unquote feature. Be prepared to spend significant time in research or reporting defects that are not really issues. So, what is correct behavior? We've looked at ways to define the test, but how do we know if the observed results are correct? In a requirements-based approach, the answer would be to look at the requirements. However, we need to consider other sources for our Oracle. Here are a few sources of expected application behavior. One is to have an independent processing source. Let's say, for example, you're testing a computation in a new system that's replacing an older system. To check the result, you could perform the same computation on the older system and compare the results. Or you could create another source, such as a spreadsheet, to have an independent source of comparison. Your approach would depend on what's available and what it would take to create something new. In some cases, you could ask a user to assess the correctness of your results. This could even be a part of acceptance testing or sign-off. Of course, this depends on the knowledge, willingness, and availability of users. Your Oracle may be a person who is not a user, but is a subject matter expert that understands the processing rules enough to evaluate the results. Or you could look at system documentation. The quality, which is basically the accuracy, detail, and clarity of the documentation, is the key factor for its use in evaluating test results. This documentation can include user guides as well as technical design documents. And then training materials once again. These may be detailed enough for test evaluation. At the very least, you should be able to verify that the documentation is accurate. Now, before totally dismissing the above methods in favor of requirements, consider that even good requirements can still have errors. So these methods can be another source of expected results, even when the requirements are defined. Well, in summary, for many years, people have understood that in dealing with software and systems, there may well be a difference between how a system is described on paper and how it's actually intended to behave. This difference is addressed in the two views of test and evaluation known as verification and validation. Verification is based on project deliverables and evaluates something to determine if it's been built correctly according to specifications or the paper world. This is primarily the developer perspective. Validation is based on evaluating something based on user need or simulated real-world conditions. The intent is to determine fitness for use from the customer or user perspective. Without both perspectives, you're at risk of building or acquiring something that meets specifications but is unfit for use. Requirements-based testing is verification. It is a solid and valuable technique if you have clear and testable requirements. The techniques described in this article are ways to test from the real-world usage perspective and can be considered validation. Unfortunately, testers have been trained for so many years that the only way to test is based on requirements that many have forgotten or never learned other methods of testing. I sometimes refer to this situation as the lost art of validation. Remember, there can be several phases and many types of testing. Requirements can define what should be tested and what defines correct behavior for some of these test phases and types, but not for all of them. Requirements are best applied at the system phase of testing. The danger of basing user acceptance testing on requirements is that they may not accurately or completely define what is really needed or desired. So hopefully this article has helped you expand or reinforce your views of validation. In addition, I hope it gives you some new techniques to use in your test design and evaluation. If you have any questions about this or any other ideas, feel free to visit our forum at riceconsulting.com, where we have a topic started for this subject. Well, I want to go over a few things now that are new at riceconsulting.com that you may be interested in. One thing is that our unit testing course is now online. We've had quite a few requests for that, and now here it is. As a matter of fact, we're having a special sale on that, 30% off until March 31st. It's going to be regularly $129, but as an introductory price, it's discounted to $89 per person. It's a fairly short course, less than 4 hours of lecture, but you also get the PDF notes and exercises. So if you do all that, it works out to be about 1 day of training. And it's a pretty good investment if you're looking, you know, for some quick reinforcement for your unit testing efforts. Also, what you're listening to right now is a brand new feature at riceconsulting.com with the podcast. I'm really glad that you're listening to this program right now, because this is the first of hopefully many of these programs that we're going to do. Some will be on some of the articles that I've written. Some will be interviews with other testers, test practitioners, software quality practitioners. And I think you'll find this to be a helpful and timely kind of way to learn about software quality, even if you're on the go. And something else I'd like to encourage you to do is to join our community of testers at riseconsulting.com. You know, part of being a better tester is to network with other testers and to contribute ideas to help other people. So at riseconsulting.com, you can participate in forums that cover a variety of topics, including test automation, lessons learned in testing, security and security testing. And we also have a section there on job postings and a place to post resumes on the forum. So I could really use some help if any of you would like to start some threads and get this discussion going. So just go to our website, riseconsulting.com, and click on the community section, and it'll take you right to the forums. The book review for this podcast is A Practical Guide to Needs Assessment by Kavita Gupta. I came across this book while looking for some new ideas on assessing training needs, and I was immediately impressed with the ease of reading, along with the practical tools and methods. Gupta addresses four major types of needs analysis. First is the strategic needs assessment, which assesses strategic business and organizational needs. Second is the competency-based assessment, which identifies knowledge, skills, and attitudes for superior job performance. Third is the job and task analysis, which identifies and determines the responsibilities and tasks needed to perform a job. And finally is the training needs assessment, which identifies the knowledge and skills needed to perform a job. All of these assessments are needed by software testing QA managers in leading and developing teams. Perhaps even more valuable are the examples of how to construct and perform these assessments. With just a little adaptation and creativity, you can apply these techniques to other types of assessments, such as process, tool, and risk assessments. If you design and conduct training courses, then this book will be an instant toolkit for you. In addition to a complete description and analysis of the various techniques, Gupta provides all the templates and checklists you'll need to get started right away in performing these assessments. Gupta also does a very good job in providing practical advice on data gathering techniques, such as surveys and interviews. I highly recommend this book to anyone that designs or conducts any type of assessments. Well, looking at the links of interest for this edition, kind of interesting stuff. If you did not receive the newsletter, you can always get the most current issue at riseconsulting.com. Some interesting links here. One is the world's largest Windows error message, which is basically mainly a picture. That's kind of entertaining. Basically, I'll just tell you what it is, and then if you want to see it, you can get the link off the newsletter. But it's a Windows error message that is being projected or shown on the big screen in Times Square, and is quite funny to see that. The exact error message itself, and by the way, I found that on the Network World. So the error message reads, video and text output has encountered a problem and needs to close. We're sorry for the inconvenience. And then it says, please tell Microsoft about this problem right there in Times Square. Kind of an interesting error message. And then we also have an article, a link about Google's web page creator, which crashes on takeoff. This article comes to us from eWeek, and basically the story is that extremely strong demand forces the search community to temporarily close down its simplified web publishing feature on the day of its debut, which was February 23rd. Google said that it was a personalized web page creator and had planned the limited release to last for just a few hours worth of signups, but because of the incredible popularity of that, they had to temporarily stop letting people sign up for it because of huge demand. And that wouldn't be the first time that has happened, has it? Another interesting thing that we have here is that I have a link for the November 2005 issue of CIO Magazine, which had a focus on the topics of requirements and testing. I would really encourage you to go, and you can just even go to cio.com and get the archive November 2005 issue on that. We have another podcast linked from a different source on the importance of software testing. And then I have a series of humor from James Huggins' website. Some interesting things I saw there that you might find entertaining as well. And we have a few other things like Dubai. They want U.S. IT business as well as the U.S. ports. As you know, that's an ongoing story on the ports. And we have a story there about an IT executive that was sentenced to 8 years prison time for data theft. And that case involved the theft of a billion, that's billion with a B, records from Axiom Company. Not a good situation for that person. The story from Computer World says that Scott Levine, formerly principal owner of the email marketing company Sniper Mail Incorporated, was sentenced yesterday to 8 years in prison on charges related to the theft of more than 1 billion data records, the U.S. Department of Justice said. Levine, 46, of Boca Raton, Florida, was convicted on 120 counts of unauthorized access of a protected computer, 2 counts of device fraud, and 1 count of obstruction of justice, the Department of Justice said. A jury in U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Arkansas found him guilty of the charges August 12th. The data belonged to Axiom Corp., a repository of personal, financial, and company data, including customer information held for other companies. The DOJ said Axiom offers customer and information management services as well as marketing services. So, quite a serious situation, but as you probably can remember from various news stories in the past, not an isolated event by any means. Well, in the brief time we have remaining in this podcast, let's go to the old email bag here and see what we have in terms of a question that I might can answer in the next 2 or 3 minutes. Here's a question from a friend of mine. I won't mention her name or where she works because I haven't asked her permission first. But anyway, she's asking, do I have any best practice metrics on requirements management? Well, my answer is I can't really say that what I'm about to say are necessarily best practice metrics, but I have found some of these to be common and also to be helpful. One is the degree of requirements change. In other words, how many times do they change, and also which percentage of requirements experience change. And this can be measured